All right, well, good morning. As Donnie said, I am Daniel Kauger. I'm awkwardly putting this stool up here so I have something to set my water on. We are continuing our study in the book of John, the title that you may believe that we... So this morning, actually, can you just start by joining me with a prayer? God, you are good. Thank you for bringing us here this morning. Thank you for the sun, and thank you for all the good things that you give us. We just ask as we open up your word and as we read through John chapter 9 and as we see you healing this blind man, God, help us to understand what that means. Help us to understand the significance of that, that your heart towards those who are hurting. And God, help us to see that ultimately this is a picture of us, ourselves and your touch in our life, God. Help me to be clear in the things that you've been teaching. And God, we love you. And we just pray these things in Jesus' name. Well, I want to start off with a little story. My family, I have a lot of kids, right? I have 7 kids, and my wife and I, several weeks back, packed up our 7 kids and headed over to the Oregon coast for a week with my extended family. So with my sister and her kids and my 2 brothers and their kids and my parents, a total of 20 kids, 10 adults, and we stayed over there for a week. And very, very fun time. But my wife and I, we kind of crossed this milestone this last year. We had 6 kids, so 6 plus my wife and I is 8, which means we can fit into a traditional minivan. But now that we have 7 kids, there's 9 of us, we no longer can travel in a traditional minivan. It's kind of a milestone in our life. We're a 2-car family, literally. We have to take 2 cars to go places. And so we were considering this upcoming trip and thinking, well, should we take 2 cars or should we rent a van, you know, a small bus in reality, to be able to truck this family over there? And after a little bit of consideration, we decided, you know what, let's rent a van. In fact, I have a picture here of us. We packed up all the kiddos. You can see there's Thaddeus and Jude, and then next to Jude is Magdalene, and then Lydia and Zeke, and then the back seat there is Logan. And if you can barely see it, there's a little hand up. There's Theodore. In fact, I zoomed in on it. If you go to the next picture, there's Theo. He had to make the picture, you know. So we packed up our kiddos, and we drove over to the Oregon coast. And one of the things when we're staying and doing this, we enjoy the company, of course, but during the days, lots of times we try to find something fun to go do. And one of the things that we did this year was we packed up the kids and we drove north of where we were staying for about 30 miles. There's this giant sand dune. I mean giant. It's several hundred feet tall. And so we get the kiddos out. We walk. You have to walk a little ways to get to the base of it. And I was holding Theodore's hand and got to the base of this giant dune, and I thought, I'll leave Theodore with some of the people that aren't going to climb it, and I'll go climb the sand dune with the rest of the kids. But Theo was just... he was just hurt, you know. He wanted to climb it, and he had just the intensity that I thought, well, maybe he can make it. And so I grabbed his hand. I said, okay, let's go. And we started climbing. Actually, got a picture of us here. We're about halfway up the hill here. We're climbing and climbing. And believe it or not, Theodore made it fine to the top. We get to the top, and it's really cool because you're climbing, and behind you is this beautiful scenery. You can see the beach behind us, and then you get over to the top, and then you can see that same view going out the other way. And there was this moment where I sat down, and there's lots of people and other kids around, but I sat down with Theodore, and Theodore sometimes does this funny thing where he acts really surprised, like he'll go, and just open his eyes, and he knows that I like it, so he does it a lot. So I sat down with him, and I'm pointing at things, and he's got these big blue eyes, and he's just acting funny. But it was just this fun moment where I was looking at stuff and pointing and just enjoying the beauty of the scenery and enjoying being able to see and being with my son. And it's one of those little moments in time that I won't easily forget. And as I was preparing, I was just thinking, you know, the ability to see, right? The ability for us to be able to perceive things at a distance is a fantastic thing, right? I mean, there's light bounces off something, goes into our eyes, and our eyes have these sensors that then can send signals up to our brain. It goes through this complex set of processes that gives us this sense of being able to actually see and distinguish characteristics of things from a distance, right? It's just this amazing thing. It's how we're able to walk. It's how we're able to drive cars, and it's so much of a part of our life, right? We communicate in writing because we can see. We're able to, in fact, they've done studies about how much we communicate just through our body language and our facial expressions, and it's how we see aesthetic beauty, right? That's what Theo and I are doing, is just enjoying the mighty scenery there. And I heard a quote, this is several years back, but Bill Gates, you know, this rich billionaire who started Microsoft, the interviewer was talking to him and saying, you know, geez, you have all this money, just what are you going to do? And they're talking through it, and he stopped him for a moment. He said, you know, it's interesting because if I went blind, I would trade all my billions to get sight back, right? And the thing that I thought was so amazing when I heard that was that we're not surprised when he says that, right? We're not like, Bill, what are you thinking? You know, don't trade your billions for that. We go, no, of course, sight is so valuable to us, right? And really what it comes down to seeing, two things are needed, right? It's not just a functioning eye or it's not just light. It's the combination of the two, right? We have to have light to be able to see. If we take away the light, it doesn't matter if you have a functioning eye, you're not going to be able to see. Or if you have lots of light but not a functioning eye, you're not going to be able to see. Either way, you won't be able to see. You really need the combination of the two. And in our series here in John, we're seeing that Jesus last week in chapter 8, Jesus stands up during the Feast of the Booth, and what does he say? He says, I am the light of the world, right? And John goes through an account that helps us see, wow, Jesus is the light of the world. In fact, if you missed that sermon last week, I just encourage you to go download it because Donnie talked about what that means, that Jesus is truly the light of the world. But I think as John is writing his gospel and he has this expressed intent at the end in chapter 20 where he says, listen, the reason I'm writing this is because I want you to see who Jesus is and to have life in him. But I think John knows that for us to see that Jesus is the light, we need more than just the light, right? We need a functioning eye. We need to have our spiritual eyes open. And so he gives this account that we're going to be covering this week where he zooms in on Jesus healing a blind man. And the purpose and the reason that he gives us this is so that we can see that for us to be able to see the light of who Christ is, you know, all the things that Donnie talked about last week, so we're able to see the light of Christ, we need to have our spiritual eyes opened. So that's where we're headed. I have an outline. It's in your bulletin. Really three parts here. John chapter 9, verses 1 through 7, we'll see that Jesus opens the eyes of a blind man. And then in verses 8 through 34, we see the social fallout of that. We see the ramifications or the repercussions of that. And then in the third part, we see this man's spiritual eyes being opened in verses 35 through 41. So that's where we're headed. Let's jump into the text, the first part of that. Blind eyes open. And we're going to start in verse 1. So John chapter 9, verse 1 says this. It says, as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And the disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents sinned, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am the world, I am the light of the world. And having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. So interesting account here. Jesus and his disciples are walking through the streets of Jerusalem. And the disciples notice that Jesus is looking at this man. And the text tells us that this man was born blind. In other words, it wasn't that he could see for a while and then had an accident and now he can't see. He's never been able to see. He was born blind. And I thought, just for a second, can we all just close our eyes for a second? Just close our eyes. And I want you to just think about a chair. And I would venture to say that most of us, probably all of us, just thought of a picture of a chair. But I want you to think about what a chair feels like when you touch it with your hands, right? Or for example, think about your trip home. Again, probably pictures are flashing through your mind of the trip home. But no, think about the way it feels when you walk through along the carpet and then you walk across the gravel. There's a difference, right? It's entirely different. It's kind of a dark existence. And we can open our eyes, but I want to just know this man has never been able to experience vision. And so everything that he's experienced is what he can touch and what he can feel. And in our culture, you know, people with disabilities can live very full lives, right? But in this culture, it was different. This man, from the day he was born, he was relegated to poverty. You know, we take it for granted that we have dreams and hopes and things that we think we're going to do. This man, from day one, his parents knew he'll be by the side of the road begging, right? And his existence was sitting on the side of the road. His hope was, maybe somebody will come and I'll hear the clank of a coin in my cup. or somebody will nudge me and hand me some food. He lived just from hand to mouth, right? That's his existence. And as I was picturing this man and thinking about it, I was thinking, you know, that one of the really sad pieces is he doesn't even actually know what he's missing out on, right? Since he's never experienced sight, he doesn't even really get what he's missing. And so the disciples, they're walking by, they see Jesus notice the man, and they ask Jesus a question. They say, who sinned? Was it this man or his parents that he would be born blind? In other words, they're asking really the question I think we would be thinking is, why? Who's responsible for this? You know, why is this man born blind? And it's a leading question the way they ask it. They give Jesus two answers. It's either this man sinned or his parents sinned, and that's because the prevailing thinking of the day was that maladies and sickness and disease were a result of either your own sin or the sins of your parents. And you might say, well, this guy was born blind. How is that his sin? And they believed in what we'd call prenatal sin. They believed that it was possible to sin in the womb and that you would come out with a malady because of that. And they got that from Old Testament scriptures where Jacob and Esau are fighting in the womb, and they assume, okay, if you can fight in the womb, then it's possible to sin in the womb. Thus, it's possible that it was sin that caused this. Well, Jesus answers them with kind of a resounding neither. It was not this man, and it wasn't his parents. And then he goes on to say, but that the works of God might be displayed in his life. And now when I read that, it sounds almost like he's saying, okay, it wasn't because of their sin, but God purposefully had him born blind so that he could come and heal him. And I don't think that's quite the right way to think about it, about what's being said here. And so I want us to think about it this way. First, I want us to just talk a little bit about what the Bible says are the origins of sin and or the origins of pain and suffering and sickness. When we look around this world, we see it all over, right? We see it in our lives. We see it in the lives of others. What is the origins of that? Well, the Bible teaches a couple things. First is the Bible teaches that sin in general is responsible for all of the maladies, all the sicknesses, all the disease that we see in this world. The Bible says that when mankind rejected God's way of doing things and did it our way, that the result had fallout on both the physical world all the way down into ourselves. And I heard of this described a way that I thought might be helpful for us to think about. I want you to just imagine for a second that you bought a brand new car. Beautiful car, one that you saved up for. It's brand new, just absolutely gorgeous. You spent a lot of money on it. It's sitting in your garage, and you're looking at your shiny new car in your garage. There's one thing that I can almost guarantee you that you will do. At some point, you'll go pull out that owner's manual, right? You open it up, and you go, okay, let's check to see what the designers say, how I should treat this, right? Designers say, hey, oil change every 3,000 miles. Okay, check. You know, gasoline, okay, that's good, you know. But imagine if you went, that's too restrictive. And you go, you know, I'm not going to listen to the designers. I'm going to oil change every 50,000 miles. And who needs gasoline? I got propane in the backyard. And if you decided to reject the designer's intent, what would happen? Your car would die, right? It would ruin. And that is, in essence, what happened with mankind. Mankind said, we're not going to do it your way, God. It's too restrictive. We want to do it our way. And what happened? Death. And the Bible describes something that it changed the very fabric of the universe. It changed us down into our DNA. And the resultant is that there's sin, or that there's suffering, there's pain, there's fallout from it. And so sin in general, the fact that mankind is living in this fallen state, is responsible for all the suffering and all the problems that we see. That's number one. The second thing we need to understand is that when we see somebody suffering, or we see somebody have a malady, or we see something like that, we need to understand that sin in particular may or may not be responsible for that. So, for instance, there's some accounts where we see Jesus going, and somebody has a sickness, and Jesus goes, oh, and he points to a certain sin and says, hey, this is their problem, and he heals them. And what does he say? Go and sin no more. That might not happen to you again, right? The sin resulted in suffering. But then there's other times, like this case, where Jesus says, nope, there's not a particular sin that's responsible for this. It's just sin in general. You live in a fallen world. That's the way there's a discussion between the disciples and Jesus in Luke 13, and there's a similar response by Jesus, and that's really similar to what happened in the book of Job. And so as we think about what Jesus is saying here, we need to understand that sin in general is responsible for all this, but not necessarily sin in particular. And Jesus' response in the Greek, so In English, we have sentence breaks, like we have periods and semicolons and such. In Greek, it's not like that. There's just a flow of words, and then there's separate ideas. And so commentators note that what Jesus, in his response here, he's really saying two separate things, two separate ideas. And the first is simply, no, there's not a particular sin this man was born with. It's just the fact that it's the fallout of living in a fallen world. And then as a separate but related thought, he says, but I'm going to use this as an opportunity to display the love of God. In essence, Jesus looks at this man, and I believe looks at this world, this fallen world, and says, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to display the love of God. And I thought, I want to hit the pause button for just a moment and make a point of application. And that's that out of the hardest things in our lives, God does his most magnificent work. Out of the hardest things in our lives, God does his most magnificent work. I have a friend who works with recovering alcoholics, and he runs several small groups, and he's done this for years and years and years. And I was having coffee with him a couple years ago, and he was telling me about some of the things he was dealing with in these small groups. And I remember making this comment to him. I made it a little tongue-in-cheek, but I basically said, man, must be rough working with people whose lives are falling apart like this. You know, how do you stay positive, you know? And I remember his response was, he looked at me and he's like, no, you have it backwards, Dan. He's like, I get to see God work all the time. I get to see God do miracles all the time. And I was thinking about my own life and just thinking about the times that I've experienced God most deeply. And most of those are the times when I'm hurting the most, right? And just coincidentally this week, I had conversations with several people where during the course of the conversation, certain hurts came up, and I realized this is so true, that the hurts that we see, one, those are oftentimes the areas where God is going to have his greatest victories. And then two, when we survey the victories that God has won in the past, those correspond to times that somebody was really hurting. And so God, out of the hardest things in our lives, God does his most magnificent work. And I thought the demeanor of the disciples versus the demeanor of Jesus was very interesting, right? Because the disciples see this man in this spot, and what do? They question, who's responsible? Is it his own fault, or is it the fault of somebody else? And what does Jesus do? Jesus jumps in and goes, man, how can I help? I'm going to use this as a way to display the love of God. Which I just thought that's fantastic. I thought, well, let's think about in your lives, who's hurting? Who do you know that is having some sort of, whether it's physical pain or emotional or relational distress? You know, does your mind first go, oh, who's responsible? Are they responsible? Or did somebody do that? Or does your mind go to, how can I help? And I just love that we see Jesus jumping in and going, man, I'm going to use this as a way to display the love of God. And so because of that, what do we see? Jesus walks over to the man. The man undoubtedly, as he's sitting there, he's heard the stories about Jesus, this itinerant rabbi that goes around and he multiplies the food and feeds thousands and he heals and he does all these amazing things. And he hears this conversation between Jesus and the disciples, and there's probably some level of anticipation on his part that, wait a minute, maybe I'll be fed, or maybe I'll even be healed. And then what happens? He hears Jesus spitting in the ground. You know, spitting in the ground, and also you can kind of hear him mixing it up. And he takes the mud and he goes and he anoints the eyes. And I was thinking about, I can't think of anything more ostensibly rude than rubbing mud into a blind man's eyes, right? Like, that just tops the charts in my opinion. And I have to believe the man, as he's feeling this, has to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. Is my condition not hard enough that now you come and you rub mud in my eyes? And I have to believe he's just, what is going on? And then Jesus tells him, hey, go wash in the pool of Siloam. Which for you and me, to walk a few blocks to the pool of Siloam, no problem. But for this guy, that's a big deal. Go wash in the pool of Siloam. And I think at this point, the man's at a decision point, right? He's got to decide, okay, you know, I like the idea of Jesus coming in and healing me, but I've had this interaction that feels so much different than I expected. Should I feel honored that he's taking the time, or should I feel insulted? Should I listen and do what he said, or should I get this mud out of my eyes? Right? He's at a decision point, but the text says that he listens and he goes and he does it. And what happens? I'm sure he gets up, and I'm sure it was awkward watching him make his way to the pool of Siloam, and it probably took a while. And he makes it there, and he wades in, feels the water, submerges his head, wipes the mud away, and comes up, and boom, light breaks into his consciousness. And I believe it was probably scary at first, and amazement, the breath was out of him, and then probably shouts of joy as he can see. I wonder what the first thing he saw was. And I think about that scene, and I'm just blown away, right? Well, after a little bit, undoubtedly, he regains his composure and goes back to where Jesus is at, and we can infer from the text that Jesus has already moved on, so he never actually sees Jesus with his physical eyes. Now, before we move on to the next point in our outline, I want you just to note something. Note the man's response, right? Because he easily could have felt that mud put onto his eyes, felt insulted, wiped it away, and what would have happened? It would have been life back to normal. The irritation would be gone eventually, right? And it would be life back to normal. And what's normal? Normal is darkness. But instead, what does he do? He listens, and he follows, and he obeys. And what happens? Freedom and healing. And I think that is so applicable to our lives. You know, so often when we come to the Lord, you know, we open up the Word or we come to church, there's an irritation, right? God takes mud and he applies it to the broken areas of our lives, the hurts that we've had, or he applies it to the relationships that are broken, or our habits, or our hearts. And it irritates, right? Sometimes there's this spot where it's like, it irritates, and we have the choice. Do we wipe it away and life back to normal, or do we listen to what he says and follow and find freedom and healing? And I've been a Christian long enough now that I've seen people take both paths, right? I've watched as people come and they dabble in Christianity, you know, enough to get that irritation. They feel something, that doesn't feel quite great. I'm going to wipe that away and I'm going to leave. And you watch over their life and you see, there's no light breaking in. They're not making that breakthrough and their life doesn't change. And I've watched other people take the opposite route and go, man, that's irritating, but I'm going to follow. And we see freedom, right? We see addictions being broken. We see relationships being restored. So when we come to God and we feel that irritation of his word being applied to our lives, we need to not be satisfied with just wiping the mud away, but we need to follow because there is freedom and there is healing. So this man, blind from birth, responds and his physical eyes are opened. And that brings us to the next spot on our outline, the fallout. And I've been working, I'm an engineer and I work at a consulting firm located downtown. I've worked at this firm for 16 years. So every morning I get on the freeway, I live in the valley, I get on the freeway, I take the division off ramp and head down to my office. And in those 16 years, every time on the division off ramp, there are people who are begging for money, right? And year after year after year, I see the same faces. I know these people, you know. And oftentimes they have maladies that I've seen many times. You know, a limb missing or somebody's in a wheelchair. And this community has seen this blind man for years and years and years. He's a staple on the landscape of this community. And so all of a sudden, this man's walking around and he can see. And so people are undoubtedly like, "Wow, he was either faking it, or he's been healed." Either way, there was kind of a ruckus, right? And so that's where we're going to pick up in the text, and we're going to read on. Notice two things, though, as we go through. Keep track of two things. One, notice the opposition that this man receives. And then at the same time, notice his progressing view of who Jesus is. Okay? I'll try to point those out as we go through, too. So the fallout, starting in verse 8. It says, the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" You know, they recognize him. "Isn't that the man that used to sit and beg?" And some said, "It is he." And others said, "No, but it's like him." You know, it's somebody that just looks a lot like him. And he kept saying, "No, I am the man." So they said to them, "How was it that your eyes were opened?" And he answered, listen, this is how he views it. He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and received my sight." So they said to him, "Well, where is he?" And he said, I don't know. So the first question is, how did this happen? He says, "Hey, the man named Jesus washed and I received my sight." And the community leaders, of course, knew, okay, there's either been a miraculous healing, or there's a beggar who's missing, and there's somebody who looks a lot like him who's walking around. Either way, we got somewhat of a problem on our hands. Let's bring this to the religious leaders. So that's where we pick up in the text. Verse 13. It says, so they brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put mud on my eyes, and I washed and I see. And some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others said, well, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was division among them. So there's this argumentation back and forth between the Pharisees and the man as he's sitting here watching. And it says, and again, they said to the blind man, what do you say about him since he opened your eyes? And first, the blind man said, well, he's a man named Jesus. And now the blind man, after seeing all this, he responds and says, he is a prophet. And so you can just kind of see this evolution in his thinking. First, well, it's a man named Jesus. And no, that doesn't really align. He's a prophet. And picking up in verse 18, it says, the Jews did not believe that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight. So the Pharisees think, you know, the most plausible explanation was that he was faking. Let's go and talk to his parents and find out if indeed he was born this way. So they go to the parents. In verse 19, it says, and the Pharisees asked the man's parents, is this your son who you say was born blind? How is it that now that he sees? And I have to believe that they were expecting the parents to say, well, this is kind of his gig. You know, he fakes this, he gets some money, and then, you know, it's just, he's been doing this for a long time. I think that's what they're expecting the parents to say. But instead, in verse 20, it says, and his parents answered, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But how he now sees, we do not know, nor do we know how he opened his eyes. Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself. And then in the text, there's this parenthetical ad, which is in verse 22. It says, his parents said these things because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said to the Pharisees, he's of age. Ask him. So they know, they've heard that if anybody is to declare that Jesus is the Christ, that there's going to be extreme consequences. And those extreme consequences is that they would be cut off from the Jewish religious system. And that, to them, they understood that to mean they would be cut off from God. The Jewish religious system was intertwined with all the aspects of their life, and this is a big deal. And they're fearing that, and they say, you know what? They're watching their words carefully, and they say, go ask him. Go ask him. He's of age. Ask him. Well, in verse 24, now the Pharisees leave the parents and they go back to this man again. Verse 24, it says, so for a second time, they called a man who had been blind and said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man, Jesus, is a sinner. And he said, whether he's a sinner, I don't know. But one thing I do know was I was blind and now I see. Interesting note there. You know, the Pharisees, in a way, try to draw them into this intellectual argument, and how does he respond? He responds with what he knows to be true, his testimony. He says, I don't know, but what I do know is that I was blind and now I see. In verse 26, it says, and they said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? And he answered them, I have told you already and you do not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? And they reviled him. He said, you are his disciples. We're the disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from. And the man answered him, why, this is amazing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone has opened the eyes of a man born blind. In other words, what Jesus did was unheard of, unthinkable. And the man, first he's saying, hey, it's a man named Jesus. And he says, no, it's a prophet. And now what does he say? He says, if this man were not from God, he could not do anything. And the Pharisees react to this and says, and they answered him, you were born in utter sin. Would you teach us? And it says they cast him out. In other words, they excommunicated him right there on the spot. And I have to believe the man, you know, he was careful in his words, and at this point, I believe his heart sunk. He was being excommunicated from the religious system. And before we move on, I want to just point out a couple of points of application. First, again, notice the opposition that the man receives, right? Something joyous. He's healed, right? There's something good in his life, and yet he's met with opposition. You know, first from his neighbors, and then pretty soon he's being criticized, he's being insulted. And I think one of the things that we as Christians need to understand is that God will work in our lives, but we are still going to be met with some level of opposition. And we shouldn't be surprised when that happens. We should just expect it. It's going to happen. And the man we saw, when he's met with this opposition, how does he respond? He responds with his testimony, right? There's these intellectual arguments going on between the Pharisees, and the man doesn't enter into that. Instead, he responds with what he knows to be true, his testimony. And interestingly enough, right, the Pharisees are asking, or they're questioning whether Jesus did this or not, and after the man gives his testimony, how does that change? They begin to ask, well, okay, well, then how did he do it? And I believe it's the power of his testimony that got them to, oh, okay, well, I guess it did actually happen. And I think that often we underestimate the power of what God has done in our lives. And one of the most powerful things we can do in the face of opposition is to just recount the victories that God has won in our lives. So the man is met with opposition, but the whole time we see this progressing understanding of who Jesus is. Among his neighbors, it was the man called Jesus. And then it was, no, he's a prophet. And then after that, it's, no, he could not do these things unless he is from God. And that's where we pick up in the text. It's the third part on our outline. Spiritual eyes opened. So start in verse 35. It says, Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he answered him, and who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you have seen him. It is he who is speaking to you. He said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. And Jesus said, for judgment I came into the world, that those who may see, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may become blind. Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to them, are we also blind? And Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you'd have no guilt. But now that you say we see, your guilt remains. Now, I absolutely love this scene. There's an interesting detail in verse 35 that I thought about a lot this week. It says that Jesus, when he hears that the man was excommunicated, that he goes and finds him. I thought about that. Why? Why was it important that the man's excommunicated, now Jesus decides to go search him out and find him? And think about this man for a little bit. On one hand, his life has gotten very bright, right? He's got a new future. He can see. He's got opportunity. His life is bright. But yet, simultaneously, there's this new darkness that entered his life, right? He's cut off from the religious system, and he would have been cut off from the festivals, cut off from the sacrifices. And I believe very much in his heart, he knew, man, I'm cut off from God. And so while things are bright in a way, things have also gotten dark in a way. And I believe as he's walking through the streets of Jerusalem, you know, life's good and he's happy, and then he catches a glimpse of people walking those steps up to the temple. And I think for a moment his head probably would hang. You know, maybe those eyes that Jesus opened would close. And I think that there was some level of shame that he felt, because he knew that his sight came at the cost of being cut off from God. And so Jesus, you know, he catches word, wait, the man's been excommunicated. And it says that Jesus goes and he finds him. I love that picture of Jesus going, well, I'm putting some things on hold. I'm going to go find this man. And he goes and he finds him. And we can conclude that he's still in the city. Jesus walks up to him. And remember, the man never actually saw Jesus. So Jesus walks up to him. The man doesn't immediately recognize him. And Jesus asks him, he says, do you believe in the Son of Man? And that was a loaded question, right? We read that quickly. But what Jesus is saying, do you believe in the Old Testament scriptures? Do you believe in what the scriptures say about the one who's coming? That one is coming who's going to connect man with God. Do you believe in the Christ? And what does the man say? The man says, well, tell me who he is that I might believe. In other words, I would like to, but I don't know who he is. And then Jesus says something, I think it's beautiful. He says, you've seen him. He's who's before you. He's who's speaking to you right now. And it's interesting that he invokes both sight and sound in his response, right? And I think it's because he's saying, listen, the voice of the one that healed you, you know and you can recognize, and he's here. Those eyes that I healed, you're looking at me with those eyes. And we've watched as this man's progression goes from the man called Jesus to a prophet to from God. And I think it is at this moment that his spiritual eyes are open and he realizes, no, I'm not cut off from the religious system. I'm being brought in. He sees that, you know, it's not that God is far. It's not that it's dark, but that the light of the world is in front of me. And what does the text say he does? He worships, right? Spiritual eyes of his heart are open and he worships. And Jesus lets him, right? Because he's God. And I just love that picture of all of a sudden this realization, I'm not cut off, I'm being brought in. And he worships him. And with that in our mind, I want us to just land on the things that Jesus says at the very end of chapter 9 there. Jesus says, in essence, it's for judgment that I came into the world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may become blind. And the Pharisees overhear this, right? And they say, what are you calling us blind? And Jesus responds and says, well, if you were blind, you'd be made to see. But because you claim you can see, your guilt remains. And the language is a little confusing there, but this is what Jesus means. First off, it's clear Jesus isn't talking about physical sight there, right? It's clear from the text he's talking about spiritual sight. And he says, if you believe that you can see, your guilt remains. And the Bible teaches that apart from a work of God in our life, we are blind, right? Paul put it in Ephesians 4:18. He says, they are darkened in their understanding and alienated from the life of God. And he describes it in 2 Corinthians this way, 2 Corinthians 4. He says that the natural man, that the gospel is veiled to them. And later on in that same chapter, he says that the natural man is blind to the things of God. And you remember in John chapter 3, when Jesus is talking to Nicodemus, what does he say? He says, you know, unless you are born again, you will never see the kingdom of God. And really what John wants us to see at this point, what he wants us to understand at this point is, what good is the light of the world when you're blind? We need to be made to see. And I love the picture here, because there's the picture in this story is of this man on the side of the road, blind from birth, never able to see. And I think what Jesus wants us to realize at this point is that that is a picture of us, right? That we are the blind beggar on the side of the road, living day to day, hoping for someone to drop a coin in our cup, hoping for some provision to be given to us, but always knowing that there's something we're cut off from. And that's just a perfect picture of this world. But Jesus said, man, I came that those who don't see might see. And then at the end there, notice he gives two types of blind people, right? He said there's those who can see, or those who can't see, those who are blind and realize it. And then there's those who are blind but claim they can see. And he says to those who are blind and claim they can see, your guilt will remain. In other words, you're gonna stay in the dark. But for those who are blind and realize that they're blind, he says, I bring healing and I bring restoration. I bring sight to the blind. And it's interesting because one of my good friends, I learned about his testimony several years back, and a big part of his testimony was this turnaround that he had from a life, just a very depraved life, to wanting to come to church. And he came to church for a couple of years before he ended up actually coming to the Lord. And as he described this, he said, you know, I spent 2 years hearing the things that were in the Bible and hearing these things. And then all of a sudden, it was like the lights went on. All of a sudden, I got it. And if you've heard people's stories, that's a common story, right? It's God coming in and touching somebody and opening their eyes. And that's what Jesus is describing here. And my sons and my daughters, I oftentimes at night we'll go through Bible stories and I'll read to them and I'll try to impress upon them the theology associated with Christianity. But there's times where I'm just like, man, I don't feel like they're getting it. You know, it's not sinking in. And I remember with my oldest son, years back, there was a point where I had been feeling that weight upon me. And I was up in our rooms upstairs and I had my guitar and we were just hanging out, and I started playing a worship song. And we just kind of sung a little bit, and later on that night, my son came to me and he said, you know, Dad, I just felt like I could sense God when we were doing that. And I was just thinking, how ironic. I spent so much time impressing these things upon him, showing him the light, But what he really needed was that touch from God. He needed his spiritual eyes opened. And I think oftentimes we put a lot of the pressure on ourselves, right? Like, oh, we've got to share the gospel with people, and they need to understand. We need to ram it in their heads. And I think in some respects that's true, but I think we also need to understand that people need a work of God in their life. They need their spiritual eyes opened. And so my prayer, as we close here, my prayer is really two parts. One, I'm praying that all of us can see this story and read this story and understand that it is biographical, right? Like, this describes us, that God touched us and gave us sight in a way that we could never have, and gave us something that we couldn't even comprehend we were missing out on. That's my first prayer. The second is that we would have a new burden for the people in our lives. Not just that they understand the truth of the gospel, but that their spiritual eyes would be open, that they'd be able to see the light and the beauty of who Christ is. Let's close in prayer. God, you are good, and you are powerful. And Lord, I just want to, first I want to thank you for being the light. Thank you for who you are, that you are truth. God, thank you that you care about us enough to come, and you care about our condition enough to heal us, Lord. And I just pray that you would impress upon us a new understanding of our poverty apart from you, and our great value to you, Lord, and the healing that you have for us. I pray, God, that as we go through the week, and as we open your word and just gaze upon the gospel, Lord, that our spiritual eyes would be open and keen to see the beauty and the light and the wonderfulness of who you are and what you've done. God, you are good, and we just pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.